All right, quick show of hands. Who here, when they get something new, who here actually reads the owner manual? It's funny because a bunch of women were like, yes. And then there's the men are like, well, do you read the owner manual at the beginning or when you like halfway through and like I'm stuck and now I've got to actually get, so that's it. That's me too. Like, okay, I don't know what I'm actually doing, so I've got to figure this thing out. Especially when you look at things that are made from IKEA. I don't really understand any of that stuff. And the owner's manual itself is kind of pointless too. It's really hard to understand. But the idea behind it is, you want to use a product that is designed for what the inventor or the producer designed it for. So they're supposed to be able to say, we've built this, we've designed this, we've got it all set, and we know the best way to put it together, and we also know the best way to actually utilize it. Now, I know that I think in life, many a times we have often asked if there is an owner's manual when it comes to life. And not just, you know, the small things, but the big things too. I wish there was an owner's manual when it came to raising kids, right? Wouldn't that have been great? What about owner's manuals that help us choose what profession we should go into? Wouldn't that be great if there was like, here's a thing, we're going to follow this, and okay, Mark Manning, as you say, okay, you should be a pastor. It'd be like, okay, great, I'm glad I chose that because that's what the owner's. But what about just overall in life? What is our purpose? We've talked about this. We brought it up when we started the book of Ecclesiastes. He's going to push on this even harder because he wants you to make sure that you are dissatisfied with the way life is for you, so that you become satisfied only when you have God as a part of your life. Super important in how we live. A lot of people, as they grow up, they're taught things like, well, as you grow up, you should make sure you get good grades. Well, why should you get good grades? So that you can get into a good college. And after you get into a good college, then what? Well, then that means you get a good job. Well, why do you need a good job? Well, so you can make money. Well, why do you need to make money? So that you can feed your kids and buy a house. Well, then what happens after that? Well, you just keep doing that job until you die or until you retire, and then what? And after a while, there comes a point where you go, I don't know if I really like this. I remember when I was young, there was a part of me that stopped and said, is this really all, like, is this all we're going to do? Like, I got to go to school? And I remember being, I don't know, it was junior high or high school, and I'm like, how many more years of this do I have? And I was actually very depressed. Graduation from college, I went into a depression because everyone else was like, yay, I'm excited. I'm going to go out and I'm going to be the person now and I'm going to get an awesome job. Then I found out that their depression came later when they couldn't get the jobs. And they're like, wait, what do I do now? Like, I trained to do this, but all I can get is a Starbucks barista. That, well, I guess I'll do it. But everyone else was so excited. I was not. Because I'm like, I got another 4 years of this. Woo! Jacob, you're graduating. Yay! Who really cares? Because you got 4 more years. And then after that, it's like, I am so excited. I don't have to, like, write papers. I don't have to prepare for tests anymore. It's like I don't have any more deadlines ever again. Well, and then I became a pastor, and that was dumb because I have deadlines every single week. And after a while, you wonder what's the purpose of it. I continue to go on, and then I figure maybe some things will satisfy me, right? Well, okay, I've got a wife. This is wonderful, and she satisfies. But sometimes I put on my wife expectations that were never meant to be met by her. Women, you do the same. There's expectations that you have of your men that aren't never supposed to be there. And then you have expectations of your kids. And then you're like, well, I'll just have a good house. And then the house starts falling apart and you got to leak your roof. And you're like, well, this is really terrible. I don't know if I like this anymore. And then you get older and your kids are wonderful and amazing, but they sometimes mess up. On occasion, it happens. A lot. And so you're like, well, that's not satisfying. And we go through this life completely and utterly unsatisfied. I don't remember. It was a poet. I don't know who was the poet, but what he wrote was amazing. I can't get no satisfaction. I try, and I try, and I try, and I try. I can't get no satisfaction. I'm going to tell you what the sermon is about, so as we go through this chapter, you will see it, and especially it comes in right at the end, which is really important. God designed this world to only be partially satisfying to you. Because if God designed this world in a way that you could become fully satisfied by the world alone, would you need God? No. If you could become happy here on earth without God, that's a problem. And I think that God instead designed it so that our happiness is just out of reach. We just can't quite get there. I knew that there was someone in Greek mythology that actually did. Does anyone know besides my son Joshua, a Greek mythological creature that had this issue? Oh, Henry. No, it was not, but man, that sounds close. His name was Tantalus. Now, I had a hard time with this because I was like Googling Greek just out of reach. I'm trying to figure out because I remember hearing this story and I'm like, what is this? And so I was like, man, who do I know that's a Greek expert? Well, that's Joshua. So I texted him in the middle of class. Thank you for answering. Like, he answered right away. He was like, oh, you're talking about Tantalus. And I'm like, Tantalus. He goes, yes, that's where the word tantalizing comes from. Like, it's tantalizing. And so I did. I Googled it. This happens to be probably when you Google Tantalus and then you look at the images, this is one of the most famous paintings of Tantalus. And he was a non-god, but he was invited up to Olympus. And then he ended up trying to please the gods, so he decided to offer up his son as a sacrifice and killed him and cooked him and put him in a stew. And so then Demeter, who was sad because Persephone was gone, it's a long story, ended up eating a bunch of the stew. But then Zeus is like, ah, this is bad, and banishes Tantalus. Thankfully, reincarnates Tantalus' son, but he's missing his shoulder because, you know, it got eaten. So, but this was the punishment that Tantalus was supposed to go through. He was subject to being in a pool of water that came up to his chin, and he was dying of thirst. And every time he would go down to drink the water would drop just below his mouth line. Now, again, I was like, well, could you do it where you, like, cup your hands and be like, as you start to go down, you know, but then probably as you go like this, as you go like, it probably drops in there. And right out of reach is this fruit. And just as he, because he's hungry, and the fruit is so delicious and so good looking, yet every time he would reach up for it, the wind would blow and the fruit would just be out of reach. Does that sometimes feel like life? That, man, I'm almost satisfied. I'm almost happy. But I just need a little bit more money. I just need a little bit more responsibility at work. I just need a little bit more better grades. And I just need just a little bit nicer car. Not really, but maybe a little more reliable car. You know what? All I need is just one kid that will be grateful in my, you know, for my family. All I need is just one grandkid. And hopefully it's a granddaughter, because I've had three sons and I'm really tired of having sons all over the place. Can I just have a granddaughter? It seems that satisfaction is just out of reach. I feel bad because there is going to be an entire city that is going to feel that today. That they're right there. It's the Super Bowl, and we came close, and it's just out of reach. God designed you that way. That's the owner's manual. God designed you in such a way so that life is frustrating without him. The theme of Ecclesiastes all through it is everything is meaningless without God. But once you have God, then there is meaning that takes place. So Ecclesiastes chapter 6, he continues the discussion. It's really, I really wrestled last week and this week of how to break the whole thing up, but it didn't really work well. Technically, chapter 5, you know, verses 1 through 7 are a section, and then he goes on to the topic of money. Remember, we hit that last week. It would be the second time that he talked about money. He's going to talk it again about a third time. Now, why money? Why is money the thing that is always talked about, especially in Christian circles? Because we have fallen into the belief that if we just had a little bit more, we would be happy. God knows us about us. God designed us. He understands how we work. He understands how we operate. And so he has to talk about money to make sure that we start learning what to do with our money and how to operate with our money, to learn contentment with our money. Still to this day, every time I do counseling, it's the top three things that cause breakups. Can you guess what they are? Let's try number three. What's the third most common reason why people break up in a broad category? No, not money. Close.
That's number one.
So number three is religion. Number two is sex. Number one is money. Do you know that rich people divorce? But wait a second, I thought you could find satisfaction in money. I thought if you just had a little bit more, you would be happy. Right, money is, it's like that image, that if I just had a little bit more, but all you're going to be doing, the writer of Ecclesiastes says, it's a chasing after the wind. It's a vapor. It's trying to nail jello to a wall. It doesn't quite work right. And we need to learn a different methodology. And we've got to consult the owner's manual, and that will help us. Chapter 6, verse 1. He continues on the discussion of money. I have seen another evil under the sun, and it weighs heavily on men. God gives a man wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing his heart desires, but God does not enable him to enjoy them, and a stranger enjoys them instead. This is meaningless, a grievous evil. God gives us stuff in life. He gives us food. He gives us wealth. He gives us possessions. He gives us things, but what he doesn't give us is the inane and natural satisfaction to them. This is something we learn and grow into. Some people wonder, like, well, why can't I just be content? Well, that's like anything else in life. You have to grow in that contentment. God did not design you to be content. You have that flaw in you. If you don't believe me, watch little kids playing with toys. Right? They have toys, and they're all around them, and then Johnny comes over. Johnny's got a toy. What does the kid want to do? I want to play with Johnny. So you've got everything there. Or, you know, when you open up gifts for your animals, because I know some of you are like, I love my animals, and that's a wonderful thing, right? And you buy all these expensive things, and what does the animal do? It plays with the box you bought it in. Like it's got everything it wants, but there's just never this satisfaction. And that's why this person is finally understanding this. I have had everything that my heart could have ever wanted, but I'm just not satisfied. This is an evil. And he keeps going. Verse 3, a man may have 100 children and live many years. That just sounds horrible to me. 100 children? Well, I guess there comes a point that you can get the older ones to help take care of the little ones. I mean, that's kind of a nice thing. 100 children? Jeez. And live many years, yet no matter how long he lives, if he cannot enjoy his prosperity and does not receive proper burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than me. We're going to get into some touchy things. This is not trying to understand a mom or dad's grief in a stillborn child. This is the stillborn child. Make that separation. It's super helpful. So he's going to talk about it from the point of a stillborn child. What did a stillborn child experience in life? Nothing. And that's what he says. He says, it comes without meaning. It departs in darkness. And in darkness, its name is shrouded. Though it never saw the sun or knew anything, it has more rest than does man. So again, I know that the person writing this is definitely treading on some very sensitive material. But again, this is from the viewpoint of the child. It never understood taxes. It never understood bullying. It never experienced hatred. It never got rejected at a school dance. Never was served divorce papers. It never experienced the loss of a loved one. That child has more satisfaction because now that child is with God. So it's a different viewpoint, and I understand that because I think about this frequently whenever I think of like my parents passing away. It's sad, isn't it, when someone that you love passes away? Question, is it sad for the person who's passed away? No, they're like, wow, this is fantastic. It stinks for us. We're the ones that are in pain, but for them, they're not. They're now with Jesus. And they are experiencing perfection, joy, love, zero pain, and they are now with Jesus. What a wonderful thing. But for us, it's terrible. So though it never saw the sun or knew anything, it has more rest than does man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over but fails to enjoy his prosperity, do not all go to the same place. So he's going to keep pushing. He's going to try and help us see the dissatisfaction of life. All man's efforts are for his mouth, yet his appetite is never satisfied. There are a lot of things I really want to ask God when we get to heaven to understand a little bit about how he created human beings. Why did he create human beings in that we always have to keep eating and drinking, right? Wouldn't it be fantastic if we could like drink water once and never be thirsty again? Would you enjoy that? Wouldn't that be fantastic? Yeah, no more carrying around your big old giant water bottles. You know, get rid of those things. Never having to worry about living in a place that water. And then food. It is so difficult. Have you ever gone out to a really fancy restaurant? And at that restaurant, you eat food, and it is good. It is so good. And you're sitting there, and you're cutting it, and you're taking these bites, and they are just melting in your mouth, and it's blowing your mind and you're thinking, this is so wonderful. What happens a couple hours later? I'm hungry again. Can you go back and eat the food you had before? But most of us would have to say no, we're not that wealthy. But even if you were, and you could go back and eat it again, what's going to happen a couple hours after that? Or are you going to go to bed and wake up? What happens now? I'm hungry again. Nothing is giving me the satisfaction that I want in life. Every time I eat, I get hungry again. Every time I go to the barber and I get the perfect haircut, what happens? Well, just more hair falls out for me. I mean, for you, it'd be like, oh, it just keeps growing and now it's... Or you buy the perfect outfit and then what happens? You spill on it because you're eating. And why are you eating? Because you're hungry. Why are you hungry? Because you ate several hours ago and you're not... Or you get the house. You're like, I finally got a house. And what happens? You have to fix it all the time. So you're like, well, maybe we should rent. And so you rent. And what happens? You watch as your money just floats away. No matter what you do, everything in life is dissatisfying. Every time I eat, I'm hungry again. Every time I drink, I am thirsty again. Every time I'm tired, I go to bed, wake up, and then guess what happens again? I get tired. Why did God design us this way? So that we would never be satisfied without Him. There's going to come a day, I think, but I'm not entirely certain, that we won't have to eat or drink anymore. Now, I'm not, the problem is we have visions of heaven, our banquets, and things that you, but now I wonder about the mechanics, because what happens after you eat? You have to go to the bathroom. So where do you go to the bathroom in heaven? Who cleans the toilet? Do they bust people up from hell in order to come on up and you know, clean the toilets for you? Well, that is actually a viewpoint of C.S. Lewis. It's called The Great Divorce. But it seems as if, because Jesus says stuff, which is really fascinating. There was a woman who was going to get some water. And back then, they didn't just, you know, turn on the water. They didn't just go, oh, I can grab some water at Vaughn's. This is easy. No, you had to go to a well that was dug, and you have to pull up the water. So she's there at the water, and she encounters this rabbi, this teacher. And this teacher, as he's talking to her, this teacher knows things about her, knows about her lifestyle, knows about her propensity to jettison men out of her life quickly. And she's now living with someone who's not her husband. And so they get into this discussion. And finally, this rabbi, his name's Jesus, and he says, you know, you keep coming to get water, but I will give you water so that when you drink it, you will thirst no more. Now, who here would like that water? I would like that a lot. Drink and just be like, that's it. I now never have to drink again. Now, of course, what he's saying is exactly what the book of Ecclesiastes is saying. He's saying, if you come to me, then when you eat and drink and sleep, and when you have relationships with others and a house and possessions, you can actually now find satisfaction in them because you find them in me. He does the same thing in the book of John, John chapter 6. He feeds 5,000 people. And what does he talk about? He says, I am the bread of life. And if you eat my body and you drink my blood, if you will never hunger ever again. How wonderful would that be? To eat and never be hungry again. We only find that satisfaction in Jesus. So every time you eat and drink, every time you're going to have to go back again. Every time you have money, you end up spending it. And then when you spend money, it's gone. Then you have to work in order to get more money so that you can spend it, so that you can then go and then work and get more money and then spend it. It's this never-ending cycle. In verse 8, what advantage has a wise man over a fool? What does a poor man gain by knowing how to conduct himself before others? Better what the eye sees than the roving of the appetite. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. It's better if you just don't experience a lot, because then you just don't know what's out there, right? Curse the internet, right? It's like vacation spots. And what do you see? Oh my gosh, you see islands in Bora Bora? Oh my goodness gracious. You get to see the Swiss Alps. You get to see the green pastures of Ireland. Oh, you get to see all these. And do you ever then get like dissatisfied? Like, I live in Orange County. Now just check this out though. Guess how many people are looking through vacation spots. Guess how many people today are going to be like, what's the temperature in Southern California at Super Bowl time? Wait, I'm sorry. Wait. It's how warm? Yeah, we're breaking records over here. They're like, I'm freezing to death. What's the high in Cincinnati today? I feel bad for them people. It's cold. It's a low of 12 degrees? 12. It could snow? Man. And you know what they're doing? And this is the reason why it happens. They've actually said this. Every time we do the Rose Parade, right? What happens at the Rose Parade? There's this beautiful parade down Colorado Boulevard. And what is the rest of the world doing? They're huddled in their houses, and they're triple-layered freezing. And they're like, there's people outside? And like, how is this possible? Yeah. Better to not know, right? Wouldn't it just be better not to understand? That's what he's saying. Every time we end up roving around, we want more, we want more, we want more. And what is God saying? It will never be enough, ever. You will not be satisfied unless you have me. It's a chasing after the wind. You've got a roving, raging appetite. It will never be satisfied. And then, this is a really interesting turn of phrase that he uses. Whatever exists has already been named, and what man it has been known, no man can contend with one who is stronger than he. The more the words, the less the meaning, and how does that profit anyone? What he's essentially trying to say is, a lot of us are still trying to fight God on this, right? We're still thinking that maybe we could be happy. And he's like, no. And what God has made crooked, you're not going to be able to straighten. You're not going to be able to figure it out. You will just not be happy. You can fight as hard as you want, and you will never. And you're contending against God. And every time you contend against God, it's like the water just goes right underneath your chin. And the fruit trees are just a little bit out. It says you're not supposed to be happy unless you're with me, and stop fighting against me. So here it is, the owner's manual. For who knows what is good for a man in life during the few and meaningless days he passes through like a shadow? I know this is really encouraging. Who knows man the best? Be the creator, the one who fashioned and designed, the one who knows you more than you know yourself, the one that understands how you operate. And if you want to find satisfaction, you consult the owner's manual. And he says, who can tell him what will happen under the sun after he is gone? I've always been fascinated by this. And imagine maybe you know someone who has passed away, and they don't have any belief system. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in the devil. They don't believe in anything. But you know what's really interesting? Almost everyone believes in an afterlife. Did you know that? This was a study done a while ago, so I'd really love if they did another study. 95% of Americans believe that there is a place that you go to after you die. And even now, I will encounter people who are non-Christians, and they will talk about someone who's passed away, and they're like, well, they're in a better place. And I'm like, well, how do you know that? Where did you get that knowledge? And I think, again, this is part of the owner's manual. This is, God knows what you need. You need to believe that your last breath is not the final word of your life. That there is someplace better to go to. There is something satisfying that is out there. And consult the owner's manual to figure it out. I think this is the reason why I think some people just get completely frustrated in life to the point that they end up taking their own life. I understand those feelings when there's this frustration and it doesn't seem to be going right. And it doesn't matter how hard you try, it doesn't matter how hard you pray, it doesn't matter how hard you work, it doesn't matter what sacrifices you make, it just never seems to work out for you. I can see why people, after trying and trying and trying, eventually say, I can't try any longer. And the crazy part is that's how God made you. So that you would, at some point, say, I've got nothing left except God. And when you have God, then you have everything. You don't have to keep striving and contending. You don't have to keep trying to be perfect or trying to have everything in your life go great. You start seeing things differently. You start seeing your spouse not as someone who's going to fulfill all your needs. Do you guys know this? Your husband and your wife was never designed to fulfill all your needs. If they could fulfill all your needs, you don't need God, right? But that's what we do. We look at them and we say, you need to make me happy. You need to make me feel special. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, make your spouse feel special, right? It's Valentine's Day tomorrow. Go and buy them something, you know, pretty. Or go pick some flowers by the side of the road. That's fine, too. Something that's special. No, some people, was that a no, Diana? I'm sorry. No, it's got to be flowers from the store. Like, don't give me no garbage flowers from the worksite, Mark. That's not good. Don't listen to him. He's an idiot. God never designed, and that's the same thing with your kids. Some people are like, oh, I'm going to have kids, and then kids are going to rely on me, and they're going to love me, and they're going to want me, and this will be great. No, kids are a mess. If you make your kids be something that fulfills you, you are in trouble. That's mainly to my female audience. Men, God never designed work to be so satisfying that you don't need anything else. Because that's what guys sometimes do. They want to feel that feeling that they're so wanted and so needed, and so they do that at work, and they work hours and hours and hours, and they give everything they have, and so when they come home, what do they give their family? Nothing, because they don't have anything left. God never designed your work to be that which satisfies you. So when you finally see that God is the only one that's necessary, that's great. Jesus said it this way. Here's the owner's manual. Do you know how God designed you? I love it when Jesus boils this stuff down for us. Seek first the kingdom of God. And then all these other things. Money, house, relationships, desire for being needed, self-esteem, all those other things will all of a sudden start being added unto you. Why is that? Because now instead of turning to someone human to help build you up, who do you turn to? You turn to God. And God says, you are enough, and I love you, and I want you to be here, and you've got a purpose, and I've got a plan. So keep going. If you got breath, he's got a plan. If you are trying to say, all I need is just a little bit more money, God never designed it so that money would satisfy. Soon you come to find out, no, I can find satisfaction right here with what I got. Why? Because I've got so much. God has already blessed me. Instead of looking over Johnny, who has one toy, we look at our stuff, we go, oh my gosh, he has blessed me incredibly. Look around at the stuff that you have and say, what has God given me? This is incredible. Why do I keep chasing after all these other things? God is enough. Seek first kingdom of heaven, And that's for anyone who is so depressed that they're thinking of ending their life, to the people who are just trying to figure out how to live day to day, to those people who are looking back on their life and filled with such regrets, and those people who are looking forward and wondering, what in the world is going to happen to me? Seek first the kingdom of God. That is the owner's manual. Because God knows what is good for you. God knows what you need and when you need it. And he will always provide in some way for you. Seek first his kingdom. Let's pray. Lord,